50 years ago, Emerson Fittipaldi shocked the Formula One world by leaving McLaren just a year after becoming a two-time world champion. He didn't move to a rival or go and race in another series or retire. He created his own Formula One team.
I knew that it would be a struggle because when you start a new Formula One team, normally you need 4 to 5 years to be competitive, normally. But as an athlete, you always have to have a new challenge. And that was a big challenge, myself and my brother, to go to our own team. I got everybody by surprise.
It was an incredibly brave move, and one that might never have happened, given the crossroads he was at after winning his first title.
When I won my first world championship, I had lunch, my father, myself, and my brother. Nobody knows this. I looked to my father, said, I'm going to retire from Formula One. And my father said, you retired from Formula One? I said, yes. I left to Brazil. I had the dream to be a Grand Prix driver. I won the world championship. What else I want? And then my father gave me a very good advice.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to F1 Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson. I always enjoy chatting to Emerson Fittipaldi because he's such a brilliant storyteller and his passion for Formula One still burns brightly. Half a century after he and his brother Wilson created the Copasuka Formula One team, I wanted to take Emerson back to the defining moments of his career that led to that sensational chapter. The thoughts about retirement after his first title with Lotus and how his dad persuaded him to continue racing. His decision to leave Lotus for McLaren and the nail-biting final race title decider in 1974, which he and Clay Regazzoni went into level on points, and Emerson was crowned champion for a second time. All of those moments led him to set up Copasuka. Emo tells me why he took on such a big challenge, the various hurdles the team faced, and the intense criticism they received from the Brazilian press. It's a real joy to hear Emerson relive such a special career. The way he describes the tension of his final race showdown with Regazzoni is so gripping, and how much he relished the pressure and challenge of taking such big risks is really inspiring. Emo, it's wonderful to have you on the show again. How are you, first of all?
Thank you, Tom. Always great. And I'll be back in Miami is always because it's my home. And I live here since 1984. To have this Miami Grand Prix is fantastic.
Certainly is. And we're going to talk about something that happened in Miami yesterday because you were reunited with your McLaren M23 as part of the team's 1,000 race celebrations. Was it like being reunited with an old friend?
Was exactly the same, the cockpit, the steering wheel position, the pedals, and then go back to that cockpit. I never believed that one day I would drive the M23 on the streets of Miami. And it was a fantastic feeling. You know, all the great champions from the history of McLaren, the world champions, and it was incredible event, very good for commemoration of 1,000 Grand Prix.
What does the car feel like? Is it still very tight? Does it feel as good as it did 50 years ago?
Feels extremely good. Another impressive thing, Tom, because it was only 550 kilos and we had over 400 horsepower. That means it was nearly 1 kilo per horsepower. I was spinning wheels and accelerate so much that, you know, was the relationship similar to a Formula One car now. The weight, power is very similar, very impressive acceleration, but there was no grip and a lot of spectators, public. Was an incredible event McLaren organized. Zak Brown, typical from Zak Brown.
Emo, I asked the team, I said, did Emerson give it full beans? And they went, oh yeah. You were enjoying
for
yourself.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
For sure.
Look, as part of the 1,000 celebrations, can we talk a little bit about McLaren in the 2 years that you raced for them? What was the team like back then in 1974, 1975?
I was very impressive when I went to choose McLaren because Philip Morris gave me the mission, go to England and you talk to Ken Tyrrell. And Bernie Ecclestone, the Brabham, was extremely competitive, teams and cars and McLaren. But when I walk in McLaren, I feel a lot of motivation. You know, the very young people, it was only like 30 people, the whole team. And Teddy Mayer, Alistair Cadwell, who was the team manager, was very much into try to win the world championship. McLaren was on the edge to come as one of the best teams. And then I choose McLaren.
Why did you leave Lotus and go to McLaren? Because you've been so successful at Lotus.
I had already 5 years with Colin. Colin was my mentor. I have a lot of gratitude for everything that Colin teach me. And the last year, 1973, I was teammate of Ronnie. And in Monza, I still had mathematical chance to win the world championship. And before the race, I had a meeting, myself, Ronnie, and Colin. And we say, if we are leading the race and the third guy is well behind, if I finish first, I still can go for the championship in Canada and the States. And Colin said, okay, 15 laps to go. I give a signboard and you guys change your position. And the signboard never come. And then I was chasing Ronnie on the limit to pass. Ronnie was defending himself because he didn't see the sign. I didn't see the sign. And finished Ronnie first, I was second. I lost my chance to win the championship that year.
Did you confront Colin about what had happened?
Immediately after the race.
What did he say?
I said, Colin said, Emerson, like he didn't realize. And I say, Colin, I think I'm going to leave. And then he called me and he didn't want me to leave. He talked to my wife, tell Emerson to continue. But at that time was the time to move because it was since 1969, driving Lotus, 69, 7, 71, 72, 5 years. But it was a great relationship.
Why do you think Colin didn't show the sign? Was Ronnie Peterson his guy? Is that?
No.
Did he see Ronnie as the future?
I think Colin didn't want to change anything on the race. Say, let finish like was. I was very, very surprised. I had a very good relationship with Colin since I start. I have a lot of gratitude. I'm still a very good friend with Clive. And Hazel was, you know, after many years, I went to Norwich to visit them. And they, you know, the Chapman family was very good to me. But it happened.
Okay.
It happened.
So Monza 73 was the trigger point.
Yes.
What happened next? You have a meeting with Teddy Mayer, the guy running McLaren at the time?
At that time, Philip Morris, I used to live in Lausanne. Philip Morris' headquarters was Lausanne. And they asked me to drive. I said, listen, we have to change team BRM. He's not doing well. Louis Stanley is a great guy, but the team was not doing well. We must found a new team. And they asked me to go to England. And it was a very difficult decision when I went back to Lausanne. I said, McLaren. They said, but McLaren never won a world championship. I said, but should be. And I was very, very happy that I chose McLaren.
Why did you have that belief in McLaren? What was it about the team that convinced you they could do it?
Tom, they are very young people, very motivated, most of them from New Zealand. When you move from one continent to another continent to challenge your life, your commitment is much stronger than the guy who lives in Italy go to England. And I could feel the energy, the motivation, very young people. Alistair Cadwell was a fantastic team manager. Teddy Mayer, very American, very logistic, organized for the team. I feel McLaren was very well organized, different from Lotus. Lotus had a great team manager, Peter Warr, at that time. But Teddy Mayer was more American way to organize a team. And I feel more like everything should be better.
He was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer.
He was a detail man.
And he lost his brother, Tim Mayer, in Tasman series. And that's why he was a very good friend of Bruce. And when Bruce went away, he took over the whole team. Ted was a very understanding about racing. People don't know, but 93, when I won my second Indy, he was my engineer. After so many years of Penske.
It's such a small world, isn't
yes,
it? This racing world.
Yeah. And then Roger said, Emerson, your engineer, 93 will be Ted. I said, that's great. And we won Indianapolis. But that's, you know, the motor race community is so small, so close to each other.
Now, the factory for McLaren back then was not in Woking. It was nothing like the MTC that we know today. You were in Colnbrook. What are your memories of the factory?
Very small, very clean, very organized. I think it was about only 30 people. And amazing, because they have the Indy program. They won 74 John Rutherford. They have Canon and Formula One. I mean, with only around 30 people. It was amazing to see, you know, all these results they had in 1974. It was amazing. And I really enjoy every minute I was with McLaren. It was really great.
This episode is sponsored by Vanta. One thing a lot of growing companies discover pretty quickly is that winning new business isn't just about having a great product anymore. At some point, someone asks about your security and compliance, and suddenly the deal slows down. That's exactly the kind of challenge Vanta is built to help with. Vanta automates your compliance process and brings compliance, risk, and customer trust together on one AI-powered platform. So whether you're preparing for a SOC 2 or managing a larger enterprise GRC program, Vanta helps keep everything organized and keeps your deals moving. And it can save a huge amount of time too. Companies like Ramp and Writer spend 82% less time on audits with Vanta. That's not just faster compliance, it's more time to focus on growing the business. No wonder over 10,000 companies, from startups to large enterprises, trust Vanta to help them prove security and build customer confidence. Get started at vanta.com/grid. That's vanta.com/grid. Can we talk about 74 then? You know, the year you win the championship with McLaren. I mean, you win your home race at Interlagos, that for the second year in a row, actually. But describe the emotions of winning at home.
You know, it's so special, Tom, because when you go race home, it was on your backyard. I started racing in Interlagos in motorcycle when I was 14 years old, and then go back there with the family, with the friends, being back in Interlagos, home, São Paulo, tremendous pressure. And with McLaren, I had double pressure, because many people say, why Emerson left Lotus now? How good he's going to be with McLaren? People's question was a good move, was not a good move. And McLaren was very good in Interlagos too. We got a good setup. We test during the winter with Goodyear, and we developed the car for Interlagos, very bumpy track. And McLaren always very fast on fast corners. And if you remember the old Interlagos, there was turn 1-2 similar to Indianapolis, and then you had uphill on the lake, and then turn of sun, we call it a very long turn. And McLaren was always very impressive on fast corners. I remember when I was dicing with George Scheckter the year before, he always very fast in fast corners.
Jody was, yeah.
Jody Scheckter was a very fast.
You say the M23 was quick through fast corners. What were the other differences with the Lotus 72 in which you'd won the championship a couple of years earlier?
The Lotus 72 to me was the best car I ever drove in my career, all the cars I drove. The Lotus 72, all this year with Colin, we developed the car, changing suspension, geometry, downforce, wings, but always incredible car to drive. I would come to the paddock, look to him, he looked to me, and we got together. It was the extension of my body. Yeah, it was a fantastic car. And there was, you know, Colin was a genius. And he has intuition to set up a car. And I remember Colin would put the two fingers here. When I talk about the car, it comes the right solution. It was amazing. Because there's no telemetry. There was just what I was feeling, telling Colin, and then Colin going to the point and improving the car. It was a fantastic car.
Did you establish a bond like that with the people at McLaren?
Yes, yes. After the first year, we had a very good relationship. Gordon Kopuk was the chief engineer. He was extremely good, very dedicated. He did a fantastic car. I mean, the M23 was an incredible car. It was a more simple car, more conventional car than the Lotus. Lotus had like the torsion bars that was difficult to work with the proper angle. We all the time working, and McLaren was more a conventional car. But we had three wheelbases, a long wheelbase, we had the mid wheelbase and the short wheelbase for Monaco for the short circuits. And there was another good work for McLaren for logistic. And we changed the weight distribution, more percentage weight on the front for the short circuits. I mean, we had a lot of pre-race study from each track, more than Lotus would do, to adapt the M23 to different tracks, different characteristics for the whole year. And that was Alistair Cadwell and Gordon Copper.
Which of those three wheelbase lengths did you enjoy driving the most?
Well, the long wheelbase on fast corner was incredible. Like Woodcote, Silverstone was amazing, the car, the balance. In Monaco, I had the short wheelbase. Actually, I was very fast in 75 when Niki won, and I was second. I was catching Niki, the Ferrari. Then I was much faster than Niki, but I couldn't pass. But we always adapt the car to different track characteristics. That was an incredible job McLaren was doing.
Okay, so in 74, you win the title by just 3 points from Clay Regazzoni. Tell us about the pressure of the whole season and what it felt like to get it over the line and to get that second title.
You know, Tony, you work the whole year. You dedicate yourself, the whole team, up and downs, break the engine, finish, get the points. We go to Watkins Glen, last race, eco points to Clay Regazzoni with the Ferrari. And by coincidence, was one of the first races that year that we couldn't make the car work properly. And then we're a tremendous tension on the team, myself. Only time, I only slept 3 hours before race. Even Brazilian Grand Prix, the Indianapolis 500, I never had the problem sleeping well before the race. But
What was the issue? The pressure, the magnitude of the occasion.
Yes, after the whole year work, go to the last race, eco points, and Clay start next to me. And then on the grid, you know, the McLaren boys, myself, we didn't want to look at the Ferrari. The Ferrari boys didn't want to look to us next to each other. And again, you know, Alistair Cadwell was brilliant because Ferrari was very fast in straight line. Typical Ferrari engine, always very powerful. And then in the morning, Alistair say, Emerson, if we run less rear wing on the beginning of the race with full load of fuel, the car can take less rear wing at that time. And we surprised Ferrari with the speed on the straight. And then in the morning, we try much less rear wing. I was very fast in straight line. I said, that's perfect configuration. And I remember, you know, before the start, I'm sitting in the cockpit. I look to Clay, and I could see Clay looking to me, but we didn't face each other because I'm thinking in hour and a half, he or me is going to be world champ after the whole year. It was tremendous pressure.
Did you like Clay? Did you have a good relationship with Clay?
I had an extremely good relationship with Clay outside of the track. Inside the track, Clay many times would take the physical space of your car that he didn't belong.
He was very aggressive.
Very aggressive. Clay had many... It was not like to drive against Jackie, Niki Lauda. But Clay, I knew he was going to be tough before the race. I knew he was going to be tough. I was ready.
So you ran less rear wing, and it was fine when you were full of fuel at the start of the race. What was the car like later on?
Well, we knew after half of the race or half fuel was going to be more tricky to drive, more nervous. But we were hoping that we could take the advantage at the beginning of the race and surprise Ferrari, surprise Clay. And was, you know, after I did a quite good start, I was on the outside, Clay's on the inside line. He took turn one ahead of me. And then you go uphill, Watkins Glen, very fast S is into the straight. And as I'm finished the fast S into the straight, I was catching the Ferrari. And then I could see Clay look in the mirror, both sides, you know. You never expect McLaren catching in straight line. And then I slipstreaming him. I went on the right side. He was in the middle of the straight, and he pushed me on the grass. And as he pushed me on the grass, I said, oh, now he's doing dying. I turned the McLaren against the Ferrari, very aggressive. We nearly hit each other. He took the Ferrari because you're not going to crash in straight line. But I kept flat out. I didn't back off. And then I had the momentum on the Ferrari. And by the end of the straight, I was ahead of him. And then I'm thinking, I'm not going to look in the mirror. I'm going to focus to see if I can open a gap to Clay. And I think he was caught by surprise. And by the end of lap one, I was already more than 100 meters ahead. I say, now focus, and gone. And I was very upset because we could crash each other in straight line. And it was fantastic to win the championship, a big commemoration, McLaren, of everybody going crazy. And I was going to talk to Clay. And then I say, well, I'm going to talk to Clay. Thanks God, I'm the new world champion. He lost it, and I won. I cannot complain. Thank you, God.
And did Clay ever wish you congratulations, even if you didn't talk about that incident?
No, he never. That weekend, no, he's gone. He's gone. But was amazing. The very tough world, the second world championship was difficult than the first one.
Then we go into 75, of course, the next year. The car's not quite as competitive, is it? But can I talk to you now about what happened next in your career? Because you'd finished first, second over the space of four seasons, and you shock the Formula One world by joining the family business, effectively, wasn't it? The Fittipaldi Coppersucker team. Talk us through that decision for 1976, 50 years ago.
Tom, if I, on a brief way, I talk to you what we've done in Brazil, for you to understand, people understand our history. When I started racing kart, I built my own kart with my brother. We won the championship. Then we built our own Formula V to race and sell to other drivers. To keep us racing, it was like a business. And then we built a prototype called Fitti Porsche with a 2-liter Porsche engine. It was the fastest car in Interlagos. We broke the lap record by 9 seconds as our own built car. And then Ricardo Dívila, who built the twin engine Volkswagen, who was extremely fast. It was dicing Ford GT40, the Alfa Romeo P33 with a Beetle. And we always loved to build cars. We loved the mechanical part of develop. And at that time, you had what I call the racing package, the Coser engine, Hewland gearbox, that anybody could buy and make a nice chassis, a nice car, and build a Formula One car. And then myself and my brother's drive for Bernie in 1973. Then one day we were talking, say, why you don't make a Brazilian Formula One team? I say, well, it's a big challenge. For Brazil, it would be fantastic to have a Brazilian team. And then my brother started, Ricardo Dívila, was a very good engineer, Brazilian engineer, very young, very talented. He speaks perfect English, very intelligent. And we started the team. And then after 1 year, Embraer, the airplane company, helped us to develop on the wind tunnel at the factory for Embraer. We developed the new car that was laying down too much. My brother couldn't drive, tried to make it very aerodynamic. And we started the team. And after 1 year, I was going to go again with McLaren. I say, I won already twice the world championship. What else I want in life? That does make a new challenge. And that was a big challenge, myself and my brother, to go to our own team. I got everybody by surprise.
Did you catch McLaren by surprise? Did you catch Philip Morris by surprise?
Was, because I was about to sign the contract at the end of the year. And then I went to Ted and said, Teddy, thank you for the opportunity, but I'm going to go to my own team with my brother to build our own car. And Teddy, Emerson, you know, we'll count on you. And that's why it happened. They got James. Because at that time, James was available.
James Hunt. Yeah.
Yes. Who was a very good friend, incredible guy.
Emo, did you know at the end of 75, when you signed for your own team and left McLaren, did you know that they were going to have a good car for 76? Did you know that you were walking away from a potential world championship?
I knew it would be very difficult. I knew it would be a challenge. I knew that it would be a struggle, because when you start a new Formula One team, normally you need 4 to 5 years to be competitive, normally. And I knew it was going to be a struggle, but it was a challenge to me. You know, sometimes in life, like when I won my first world championship, I went back home to Switzerland, and I had lunch, my father, myself, and my brother. Nobody knows this. And I looked to my father, said, I'm going to retire from Formula One after Monza the next day. And my father said, you're retired from Formula One? I said, yes. What else I want? I left to Brazil. I had the dream to be a Grand Prix driver. I won the world championship. What else I want? And then my father gave me a very good advice. He said, the way you like racing, I know in 1 or 2 years or 3 years, you'll be back in Formula One. It'll be much difficult if you continue, because there was a lot of crash. But as an athlete, you always have to have a new challenge. And then was a challenge to continue with McLaren. The next challenge was to build our own team. And
did you quite fancy the player-manager role, if you like, being the driver and the boss?
Not really. I was given the idea mainly for the performance of the car. My brother's running, and they had very good team manager, Joe Ramirez. The great Joe Ramirez.
Yeah, who worked with Senna and Prost at McLaren.
And Joe was running the team. We had a very difficult logistic problem, because every time, for example, an engine come from England, we had to clear customs in Brazil. It was so complicated. We waste so much time, so much energy on working between Europe and Brazil to build the car. The whole car was built next to the Gate 7. Interlagos is still Gate 7 there.
So the factory was at Interlagos?
It's 100 meters from the gate. Yes, yes, yes.
But you were having to bring a lot of stuff over from England, the gearbox, the engine.
Yes, all the brakes will come from England. Always very difficult, the logistics to import.
Did you have a base in England as well?
Not the time in the beginning, no. The first 2-3 years, no. And then we had the base, yes, in Reading.
So the cars would return to Brazil after every race?
No, we had a maintenance place, not factory, just to keep the cars running from Grand Prix to Grand Prix. But the building, everything was in Brazil at that time.
This episode is sponsored by Shopify. The best online checkout experiences are the ones you barely notice. Because everything just works. You tap once, the purchase goes through, and you're done. And quite often, that's because you've spotted that purple Shop Pay button. Instead of digging around for your wallet or trying to remember yet another password, your details are already saved, so checkout takes seconds. And that's all powered by Shopify. From household names like Heinz and Gymshark to new businesses launching every day, Shopify helps millions of brands run their online stores. If you've got an idea for a business of your own, Shopify gives you everything you need in one place. From ready-made templates to build your online store, to built-in AI tools that write product descriptions, create page headlines, and even enhance product photography. And can even help you find your customers with email and social media tools designed to get the word out about your brand. And if you ever need help along the way, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to guide you. So see less carts go abandoned and more sales go with Shopify and their Shop Pay button. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/beyondthegrid. Go to shopify.com/beyondthegrid. That's shopify.com/beyondthegrid.
Emerson Fittipaldi talked about how every detail mattered when racing his McLaren, from the seat to the pedals. That focus is what makes playoff hockey so intense. Every shift counts. There is no coasting. NHL on TNT has the best coverage, with Paul Bissonnette bringing laughs and Wayne Gretzky breaking down the action. The studio crew makes every game feel bigger. Playoff hockey is fast, physical, and full of surprises, just like a title-deciding race. Watch the Stanley Cup playoffs on TNT, TBS, True TV, and HBO Max.
You You scored 3 sixth place finishes in that first season in 76. Was that enough for you to think, yes, we're on the right path, we can succeed?
You know, going first Grand Prix, the Brazilian Grand Prix, I call Dick Cosser and Dick Costin, because our engines were used engines from 75. They all used engines. And I said, for the Brazilian Grand Prix, I want a brand new Cosser, because it's so important for us to do well on the Brazilian Grand Prix. And they made us, I mean, a perfect engine. They sent to Brazil. I qualify, I think, 5th or 6th on my first race of Copersucar. And then we are hoping we'll never have an engine problem. After 4 or 5 laps, went in 7-cylinder the engine. I think I broke a spring valve. And then I was very disappointed the first Brazilian, because it was good, run strong. And then every track with low grip, we were quite fast. Tracks with high grip, we couldn't get the car working. It was a very difficult year.
I mean, in terms of performance, how much worse was it than the M23 you just left at McLaren?
It was a different level. You know, the M23 was a much better car, much easier to drive. Our car was learning, you know, new tracks, new configuration, didn't have the setup. McLaren had all this, the years of going from Grand Prix to Grand Prix, what setup. And we started a new team, and was Ricardo Div the engineer. We didn't have the past setup to use in the present, and always struggling to keep up with, you know, the other cars.
In terms of points scored, your best season with Copersucar was 78. I think it was 17 points. You finished 10th in the Drivers' Championship. What came good that year? What was it about that year? The car was just simply more competitive, or was there more to it than that?
It was a modified car that we had, the ground effect car, was developed by engineer Caliri, ex-Ferrari engineer, designed the aerodynamic of the car. It helps a lot. And again, in Brazil, it was fantastic. At the Brazilian Grand Prix, beginning of the season, to finish 2nd behind Carlos, but ahead of Gilles Villeneuve, ahead of Mario, on the Lotus that he won the championship. We had a very competitive car. And most of the races was a good car. The F5A was a very good car. It was the best year. At the end of the year, finished ahead of McLaren points, ahead of Renault, Williams.
Did you struggle with motivation just in the cockpit?
Not really. No, driving, no. I always want to take the maximum out of the car, the track of myself, because I still always enjoy racing. I start losing motivation 98. That's the reason I retire, because the full ground effect car, to me, it's difficult to explain, but if you arrive at the end of the straight in Silverstone and you have 5 kilometers more going to the corner, multiply so much the downforce, then it was difficult to feel the limit of the car. And then was taking away the art of driving to me. It was just, you have to have big balls. Big balls.
Emma, it was such a brave project, the Copersucar one, wasn't it? I mean, when you reflect on it now, and there was so much that was good, by the way. You gave Adrian Newey his first job in Formula One. You know, Keke Rosberg was your teammate, and he got his first podium in Formula One. There was so much that was good. When you look back now, all these years later, are you pleased you did it? And what would you do differently?
I was very pleased in 98, because to have a good Formula One team, you need good people. And we had Peter Warr. To me, it was a dream team. Peter Warr, Keke Rosberg's teammate, Harv Posthoeven, Adrian Newey, and Ricardo Divila is still there. And then we had the new car, the F8, that we developed. It was a very good car. It was first car that Adrian, well, he was a junior engineer. Harv Posthoeven was a very good engineer. And then July, the marketing people from Skoll, Brazil, who was a group owned by Canadian Brazilian group, called me and say, Emerson, the Brazilian press, not the racing press, but the regular press who don't understand about racing, is destroying the team. Say it was 5 years, you don't have any result. It doesn't justify for us to continue sponsorship. I had this shock news in July when they just announced the F8. And then I call everybody, I say, listen, guys, by the end of the year, I release CAC, Peter Warr, everybody, we cannot continue. And then we went to the first race in Hockenheim. I think CAC, first out of the box, you qualify fourth, and that was fifth or sixth. But that was a very bad news, but it's part of the sport, part of motor race.
But given that performance, were you not tempted to try and find another title sponsor, or is that too simplistic an analysis?
I try, but it was very difficult because the Brazilian press, not the racing press, the regular press destroyed the team. After so many years, they say, why? They didn't understand it takes 4, 5, 6 years to get the Formula One team going well. And then every potential sponsor went to Brazil, they said, but Emerson, look what the press is saying. I said, but you know, now I have good people. And it was fantastic, it was a shame. Things happen, and that happened.
It feels you were just turning the corner at that point. I'm reminded of Honda at the end of 2008 when they withdrew from Formula One. Of course, Ross Brawn bought the team and Jenson Button wins the world championship and they win the constructors. It kind of has that feel about it, doesn't it?
And my brother Wilson, who dedicated his 5 years of his life to the team, and he was very frustrated after that. Actually, he got sick because of that, my brother, because of so much feeling was that's his life. You know, to have at that point, to have a good team, we could not continue. And Wilson got sick because of that.
When you were racing for your own team, did any teams, other teams, try and lure you away and to go and race for them? Did Enzo Ferrari try and get hold of you? Was there any of that?
No, but Ingeniero Chitti from Alfa Romeo talked to me, but I was so focused. And what happened when Nicky had the crash, 76 in Nürburgring, I had my own doctor going to all the races because the rescue team at that time was very not well organized. And then I hired a doctor that speaks. He graduates from Heidelberg University in German. He was from Panama, speaks Spanish, Portuguese, French, English, and German. And I authorized him to go to all the Grand Prix if I had a bad crash. For example, if I have burn, takes to German. If I had neuro problem, England. Well, I had a letter. Anyway, he was all the Grand Prix with me.
Were you the only driver to take?
At that time, I was the only one.
Only driver to take a doctor with you?
The doctor, he had like a survive kit with him all the time because the tracks didn't have that survive kit. It was just before Dr. Watkins. It was 2, 3 years before Watkins. Anyway, after the crash, I'm at the hospital with my wife and Nick's wife. And my doctor was inside with the German doctor. He was a German doctor. And he comes out and says, Emerson, he's 50-50 chance to survive because he don't have oxygen on the blood. We are doing every hour blood transfusion to keep up the oxygen for Nicky because he burned all the pleural. Or the inside the lungs, he don't have enough oxygen to keep up life. And then it was like midnight. I was very concerned. And Daniele Audetto, who was the team manager of Ferrari, said, Emerson, come here. I have a call for you. I pick up the phone, was Ingeniero Ferrari. Say, Emerson, and he say, Fittipaldi, io volevo che tu guida nel posto di Nicky. I want you to drive to replace Nicky. I was shocked. I says, Commendatore, sorry, I cannot talk now. Put the phone down. But that's part of Formula One. I was shocked.
So Nicky was fighting for his life next door and Enzo was
trying to hire me to replace. And then Nicky was 47 days after he was in Monza. It was a miracle. And Nicky was so strong. You know, mentally, he was a fantastic driver.
Look, I understand the lure of your own team. I understand why you went to Lotus and McLaren. You've explained that one. Were you ever seriously tempted by Ferrari in more normal circumstances? Not after Nicky's accident, but, you know, do you wish you'd ticked that yes. box?
I always had the dream to drive a Ferrari because people don't realize 1948, first Ferrari win, he built like a monopost, was like a Formula 2 car. They had the Grand Prix cars and Enzo Ferrari built a smaller car and went to race in Bari. And my father broadcast the race live to Brazil.
Of course, your father was a journalist, Formula One journalist, wasn't he?
Yeah. Radio journalist.
Yes.
And then when I met Commendatore, Ferrari invited me to have lunch 1971 in Maranello, first time I talked to him. When I arrived there, he just gave me the hand and said, Fittipaldi, come stai Chicolandi? Because Chicolandi, we say in Brazil, Chicolandi was the first win for Ferrari, was a Brazilian driver. Not many people know this. It's on the book of a Ferrari. And then I call him Mr. I never call him Chico because he's older than my father. I call him in Brazil, I say, Mr. Chicolandi, first word Ferrari wanted me to drive. He say, how Chicolandi is doing? He nearly cried on the phone. It was very emotional to him. And not many people know that first Ferrari win was a Brazilian driver.
You taught me something. Yeah.
And a week ago, I was in Bari driving Testarossa, commemorating the 1948 Brazilian win with Ferrari. And it's interesting, my father was there. And after the race was the first Ferrari win, Ferrari had the emblem on his pocket. And then after one, he put it on the nose of the car.
After the first win.
After the first Ferrari
yeah.
win.
Yeah. And but then, when you were with Enzo in 71, you were obviously very loyal to Colin Chapman and Lotus, but did he try again to hire you at another time?
Yes, in 71, he said, Emerson, I pay double than Colin is paying for you, but you have to drive the 312 sports cars. The sports car championship was very important for Ferrari. And then I say, thank you for the offer, but I'm focusing Formula One and I will continue the Lotus. It was difficult to refuse offer from Ferrari.
Particularly when you were so young.
Yes. But I was focused. I was happy with Colin. And at that time, I was focused on Formula One. I didn't want to drive, you know, Le Mans or the sports car race. I said, but I love Formula. I always focus in Formula.
Can we talk about age quickly? Because you were incredibly young at a time when drivers tended to be a bit older than they are today. And I'm immediately reminded of what Kimi Antonelli's doing this year. He's leading the world championship, aged 19. There must be some parallels with what you went through at a sort of similar, you're a tiny bit older, but not much older. How difficult is it to be in the position that Antonelli's in now when you're so young and raw?
I think one most important thing is to have the support from the team. And I remember when there was the tragedy of Jochen and Colin called me 2 weeks later, say, you'll be number one driver. I said, Colin, I don't have experience. I was going to be my fourth Grand Prix. And he said, don't worry, we'll support you. The whole team support you. And I think Kim Antonelli, if he really has the support, full support from Mercedes, from Toto Wolff, he can succeed. He has to feel these people behind him, supporting on the World Championship.
Tell me what more
and
about...
That was important for me when Colin said, we'll give full support to you.
But what does full support from the team mean in that you have to be the number one and get all the best equipment? Or is it actually taking pressure off you and saying, don't worry, whatever happens, we have your back? Because I feel Mercedes were very much like that with Antonelli last year. Is that what Colin was like with you in 1970?
I think both. You feel to have everybody motivates to work with you, and that takes away the tremendous pressure because they know you are young, you don't have so much experience. I think both situations, yes, help you, for sure, help me a lot. Colin was always very good.
What didn't you know in 1970 when you became Lotus's number one after Jochen Rindt's death that you did know 2 years later when you won the world championship? What was the biggest thing you learned in those 2 years?
I think to have more confidence on driving in extreme situations, like, for example, when Watkins Glen was my first race as number one driver, I qualified well, but then it was raining on race day. And I made a big mistake in Monza. I said, I cannot do another mistake. And all this lack of experience and lack of self-confidence on extreme situations. I was too conservative beginning of the race, the U.S. Grand Prix Watkins Glen. After 1 year, 2 years, I never had that again. And then you have a self-confidence in extreme situations. You can give 100% and take a risk. That was the biggest difference in 2-3 years of my career.
And do you think that still applies today? So do you think Antonelli, if we talk about him again, will he be going on that same journey of self-confidence that you experienced?
For sure. For sure, that's going to develop more self-confidence, less scared to do a mistake. Because when you are thinking to do a mistake, you are more proper to do a mistake. And you are focused to drive fast and you don't do a mistake so much. And I think that's a mental perseverance that when you have experience, you can do and you're ready to do it.
You never know in Formula One when you're going to get another opportunity to fight for the world championship, right? We've seen that many times over the last 76 years. For Antonelli, you know, Mercedes, as we sit here in Miami, still have the best car. He may not get another opportunity like this. How do you square that away in your mind? How do you stop that pressure creating problems for yourself and mistakes?
I think it's a very difficult answer because when you start building the world championship, you start looking, I have a potential to be world champion. And then you know everything has to be perfect for you. The car preparation, the setup, the strategy for the race. Now they have, you know, all the tire changes, all the strategic. It must be a tremendous pressure going on through the year. But it has to be a perfect year. And Tony, you're 100% right. You never know if that comes back ever again. We saw the history of Formula One. I mean, drivers like Stirling Moss, Ronnie Peterson, Carlos Reutemann, they could be world champion. And they never achieve because they never come the opportunity again. And the question of to be on the right year, the right place, with the right team can happen.
What about the Italian media? Because we hear the whole time about how much pressure they put on Ferrari. Well, Kimi Antonelli is the first Italian to win a Grand Prix since Giancarlo Fisichella 20 years ago. Do you think they will be sympathetic towards him? What's your experience of the media in Italy?
I think you have 100% support from the media. It would be fantastic. I mean, I spent the last 4 or 5 years in Italy, and Monday morning you go to a bar in Italy, they are talking about the Grand Prix, like football in Brazil. And they love motor racing. It's amazing. Everywhere I go in Italy, they are asking now, Emerson, how is Kimi? What do you think? I was in Bari, have this fantastic event about Chico Landi, who's my idol, who's first Brazilian. And everywhere I went, everybody asked, and how Kimi? They are so enthusiastic. And they love racing in Italy. And that's fantastic to have Kimi.
Well, Emerson, it's not just the Italians who love racing. I can't believe we're talking about events that happened 50 years ago, but your passion for Formula One still shines bright. It's inspirational, and thank you very much for your time. Great to catch up again.
Thank you, Tom. It was a great interview.
Just wow. So much enthusiasm for Formula One in one man who turns 80 later this year. Emerson, thank you for your time. There is so much to reflect on in this chat, but let me take one final opportunity to emphasize what an incredible move it was for Emo to start his own Formula One team when he was right at the top of his game. The modern day equivalent would be someone like Max Verstappen starting his own team. A huge story. And I'm just sorry it didn't result in more wins and more titles for Emo. Well, that's almost it for this week. But before I go, a few parish notices for you. F1 Nation's review of the Miami Grand Prix is out now. I'm joined by Lawrence Barreto and James Hinchcliffe to reflect on Kimi Antonelli's third win in a row and what that means for George Russell's title challenge. And on this week's F1 Explains, Laura Muller answers your questions. That's out on the F1 Nation feed on Friday. Thank you very much for listening. I will, of course, be back next week with another big name from the world of Formula One. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.